This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 202 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we now that we've got our gremlins out of our computers, huh?
Yes, we did have some really, really strange gremlins this evening as we're recording this, but all the equipment seems to be working perfectly. So I guess we're ready to launch with another great episode.
Yeah, sounds good. We could start off with another return to service like our computers, which is the Hammerhead is back. Drones discover rare plants in Hawaii. A category I'm going to call nefarious purposes, wolf packs in Walmart, and some listener feedback. Well, our first story comes from SputnikNews.com. Piaggio Aerospace reissues the P1HH Hammerhead. Now, if you've listened to Airplane Geeks, we know that the Piaggio is one of our favorite airplanes on Airplane Geeks. And Max and I were both really excited when Piaggio decided to take this pusher aircraft and make it into a UAV, a male UAV, or medium altitude, long endurance.
That's right. The Piaggio P180 that the Hammerhead is based off of is a business aviation turboprop, twin turboprop pusher aircraft, like you said, David. The Hammerhead, the unmanned version of this, first flew in December 2013, but last year, as we reported, mid-year, about May, I think, in 2016, the prototype, The P1HH Hammerhead, crashed off the coast of Sicily. Now, there's not a lot of detailed information as to just exactly why the prototype crashed. We do see reported that there were some flight control system integration problems. But I guess it's taken them a year, David, but they're finally back in the air with the Hammerhead.
And believe it or not, even with the accident, the United Arab Emirates is going to take delivery for 8 of these aircraft at 346 million euros. The Hammerhead is kind of a neat concept. You have a 9-place business turboprop. You take out the people, the pilot, the co-pilot, and all the passengers, and all the really nice interiors that P-108s get, and you replace it with surveillance equipment, ISR, for which is intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. And remainder of the area you fill up with fuel, and you get a male, which is a medium altitude, long endurance. So you have an aircraft that can be piloted for up to 16 hours.
Long endurance, it can loiter at relatively low speed, and it can carry several different kinds of payload combinations to perform different missions, according to Piaggio. It's got aerial, land, coastal, maritime, and offshore security is one kind of application. Electronic warfare is another possible role for this. And, of course, this is an aircraft, an unmanned aircraft that's going to have, I think, David, essentially military applications.
Oh, absolutely. Communications and electronics intelligence. But the other part about it was Piaggio was trying to make a system that's modular. You're talking about something that will fill the role of a Reaper or a Predator, but with a larger lifting power and modular, so that you can have multiple sensor suites that you could replace in and out depending upon the mission you want to fly. So you get a proven airframe, a tested airframe, and basically you're just taking out the pilots and making room for all the surveillance equipment. But it is not, let's just say this, it is not optionally manned like we've talked about in the past. This is a unmanned aircraft. You can't put pilots in it and fly it as a piloted aircraft. You can only fly it remotely. So it's not optionally manned. It is an unmanned aerial vehicle based on a production business aircraft.
And it's good looking too.
Yeah, and they sound really funny too, in a very good way. When they used to have them leave Philadelphia International Airport, you can always tell them because pusher propellers sound very different than tractor propellers. So we'll keep following it because it's the drone of choice for the UAV Digest. So let's move from Europe to the Pacific. This is from TheVerge.com. Drones hunt down rare plants in Hawaii by going where people can't. I guess this is our drones for good story, huh? They're using UAVs to surveil mountainsides for exotic plants that would be impossible to normally reach by climbing, or they could be reached, but it would take a hell of a lot longer to do that than fly an unmanned aerial aircraft over it.
Right. What we have here is something called the National Tropical Botanical Garden. And they have a variety of different facilities and areas. But one in particular is a preserve in Hawaii. It's a large preserve, a 1,000-acre preserve. And they're using drones to do some surveying and investigation. And what they have done is use a drone to go up a really, really steep, inaccessible cliff. Not something that you could climb up very easily or very safely. And they've discovered a number of really critically endangered plants up there. One in particular, a very rare plant that before this discovery, they had thought that there were, now get this, just 25 of these plants thought to exist. And using this drone, they went up there and they actually found 10 more of these plants. And then there's some other plants too that they found that they didn't even know were existing in that location in those quantities. So kind of interesting.
I like the fact that we have increased almost by 50% the amount of these plants that we knew nothing or little about. So, I mean, let's hear it for drone technology. And biologists are getting a lot of use out of drones. And this is one of those things where you have a technology that accesses the inaccessible. You know, sooner or later, they're going to be flying drones over the Amazon canopies to search for life up in the trees where it's hard for people on the ground to get up to. So really nice story. And our plant life increased by 50%.
Now, of course, when we read these things, we're always interested in knowing some of the technical aspects of this. For example, what kind of a drone did they use and that sort of thing. And the articles, the reports that are available don't specify that. We've written to the National Tropical Botanical Garden to try to get some more details about just what they were flying. I haven't heard back yet, but if we do, we'll report that here.
Ooh, I like that. My co-host took initiative that I didn't think of doing. Well, thank you, co-host.
Anytime, David.
This is why this symbiotic relationship works, spaced around drones. See how the biology works on this podcast. All right, let's talk about. Nefarious seems like the appropriate word because there was a bunch of stories this week. We're kind of inundated with. I don't want to say bad news, but this near miss and that near miss and this investigation and that near investigation. And we'll start off with FoxNews.com, the home of more fake media. Homeland Security concerned about commercial drones being used for nefarious purposes. Well, the Army has published a 13-page document, Counter Unmanned Aircraft System Strategies. And this is, I guess, sort of stemming from our engagements here in the United States with ISIS in the Middle East, where suddenly they are using off-the-shelf small UASs and weaponizing them. Kind of like what we've learned from, what's capable of from the state of Connecticut.
That's right. Got to throw that in, huh? We've really seen an increase in the use of drones in conflict areas. We know that ISIS, for example, actually has a drone warfare unit. The number of sightings of drones being used in these areas has just increased dramatically. And so a question is, might we then start to see similar kinds of activities here in the U.S.? Homeland Security, of course, is very concerned about that. In fact, there's a quote from a DHS spokesperson that says that, quote, DHS does consider commercial drones configured or modified to employ explosives or weapons a concern. This is due to low cost, ease of access, and the quick pace of this evolving technology to adapt beneficial unmanned system equipment for nefarious purposes.
Just to confirm or to clarify what we're talking about, we're not talking about military drones. We're talking about off-the-shelf things like DJI Phantoms that are weaponized. Yeah. We're not talking about Predators and Reapers and all of the military drones used for military purposes. These are actually being used as off-the-shelf, purchase them from Amazon, have it delivered by drone, and then you can weaponize your drone delivered by drone for, as they say, nefarious purposes, or in simpler terms, terrorism.
So this is certainly getting a lot of attention, and we don't really have, you know, a resolution yet. But there's an example of this in our next article from Flight Global. U.S. Air Force calls for drone defenses after F-22 overflight. And this is kind of a story, David, of how we're not at the point yet where we have a good strategy for countering the use of drones for these kinds of purposes.
It's kind of funny. We've talked about a lot of anti-drone systems. I've jokingly said for every drone, there's equal and opposite anti-drone system. Having a system but not having a policy to use it makes the system null and void. Evidently, Air Combat Command has had various bases have drone overflights, but they don't have a policy yet to handle those overflights. The Air Combat Command and the United States Air Force is looking to see if they can develop a policy to, let's be honest, shoot them down if they're in violation of airspace. But right now, even though we have a lot of anti-drone technology, we don't have a lot of anti-drone policies.
Right. It's authority to do something about these rogue drones, if you will. That's kind of an issue here. For one thing, in order to give authority to do something about them, there are a number of U.S. government agencies that have to get involved in granting the authority. There's a quote in this article that's very interesting that, paraphrasing it, it's that it's a civil authority that can be executed by military forces. And so the issue here is that those military forces don't have that authority yet, has to be granted from the civil side. And until that happens, they're kind of at a loss to do anything. At least I think that's the picture that this article is portraying, which is kind of a surprising situation to be in. I guess if you understand how these things work, it's not surprising. But stepping back or standing back from it and looking at the situation, you would think that if a drone potentially strikes an F-22 on final, or there's a drone buzzing over the flight line at a military base, you would think or you would hope that that could be taken care of immediately.
Well, there's no rules of engagement.
Yeah.
And okay, Max, trivia time. Who controls the United States airspace?
The FAA.
And what happens if you shoot down an aircraft in the U.S. airspace? Whose responsibility is it?
The FAA.
So you have a civilian organization that's controlling. Now, let's phrase this, that say we're at a forward operating base in northern Iraq, where we're overseas. Now, you've got a bunch of A-10s on the line, and ISIS flies a UAV with explosives over those A-10s. That's a war zone. They'll shoot first, ask questions later. But you come home to the continental U.S., you have the same arguments like you've always had, where, you know, Air National Guard aircraft are controlled by the governor, but they don't necessarily have the ability and technically for the Air Force to use them in a hostile environment. They have to be released by the governor. And it's kind of like the FBI and the CIA. The CIA is not allowed to, because they're an overseas, they're not allowed to commit domestic operations. And the FBI is responsible for that. So it's not sort of not surprising that here in the United States, we have these overflights. And again, we don't know if they're purposeful or innocent, where the person doesn't really know any better.
True.
Though they should. But it's really the FAA's purveyance, not the Air Force. You know, so they have to get some sort of legislation is going to have to get written, or rules of engagement that say, you know, if someone's flying a vehicle over a U.S. base, it's determined it's hostile and you're allowed to shoot it down. But up until that FAA releases that authority, the Air Force isn't going to be able to do much about it.
Well, I hope this is something that can get resolved fairly quickly, you know, before we have a significant incident.
And it might take a significant incident. I mean, we here in the United States have a division of power. We have civilian rule over the military, and civilian rule always takes precedence over military authority. I mean, that's the way this country was built. So the civilian authorities have to release the military to have that option. So this is old school military history, and I'm rambling on, so maybe we should move on to DJI and motherboard.vice.com.
So this is the Chinese taking some action on their own in this regard, if you will. So what we have here is DJI locking down its drones against a growing army of DIY hackers, do-it-yourself hackers. The subtitle here is Drone Hackers Have Forced DJI Into an Arms Race. And as we all know, DJI has geofencing and has been kind of, I would say, at the forefront, really, of building controls into the software that affect your ability to fly or not fly in certain places. Well, people have found ways to get around the DJI flight restrictions. And in fact, they've been publishing these exploits pretty broadly. And so it's relatively easy to find out how you can defeat the controls that DJI has built into their systems. Then we have DJI reacting and updating their software in order to break the hacks. And here we go back and forth. One side takes a step, or the other side takes another step, and then the first side is back taking their step, and here we go back and forth.
For every drone, there's an equal and opposite anti-drone.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Now, it's a bit problematic in that this is like jailbreaking your phone, for those of you who are familiar with that, where you're basically working around restrictions that are built into the device. When you do that, you get to do things that you maybe weren't supposed to do originally, but there's no guarantee of stability of the device. So there's some risk associated with modding your DJI Phantom, but it's kind of a popular practice.
Well, it's computers, you know, and there are going to be people who operate computers who want to, you know, fix it, modify it, break it. there are these people who go out and buy these Raspberry Pi things, you know, and they don't put whipped cream on them. They make them and they make them do all sorts of magical things, like my co-host. So it's a game for a lot of people. You know, it's a challenge. It's like hacking into Microsoft. They're the prime target because they're the best at it. And for every drone, there'll be an equal opposite anti-drone. So we'll keep following, and I don't think it'll ever stop. Do you?
No. Although there may be an approach that DJI might be considering or looking at, which is this, that when you look at being able to legally, let's say, hack into devices, in the United States anyway, there are some devices where you can hack into them. It's perfectly legal to do so, in others where it is not. So, for example, hacking into video game consoles is a violation of the law, whereas hacking into cell phones or automobiles is not. And drones are not addressed specifically in any of all of this. So, I mean, that may be a future approach, is to try to include drones in the category of thou shalt not hack. But even then, like we say, David, it's kind of this arms race, and whether it's legal or not legal, there's still people that were going to try to do it.
All right. Well, let's talk about swarms. We like swarms. Mm. We talk a lot about swarms technology, but normally we talk about swarms and hive technology. We haven't ever talked about wolf packs. And this is from unmannedsystemstechnology.com. Kratos Defense and Security Solutions subsidiary, Microsystems, announced its Wolfpack swarming technology. So that's kind of redundant, isn't it? They're a Wolfpack, but wouldn't it be a pack technology, not a swarming technology? But what are we talking about, Max? I digress.
It's interesting, and we do see a lot of people looking at swarming control systems, and there are different approaches. In this one, there's a lead vehicle or a lead drone, and the pack, the swarm, follows the leader. Now, they're autonomous. There's no centralized control system, but the drones can recognize each other. They can locate each other. They stay a fixed distance from each other. And it's somewhat able to continue on if there are perturbations. So, for example, if the leader gets taken out, then another one of the drones can elevate its position to become the leader and continue
the leader
with
the pack.
You knew where that was going. So it's interesting how that the swarm is making these adjustments and adjusts and reconfigures itself along the way. Interesting capabilities. The leader of the pack can be controlled manually. It can be controlled remotely or autonomously. It can drop out of the mission if it needs to, as we said, in another vehicle. The drone can take its place. The swarm automatically senses and avoids other vehicles as they follow the lead. There is a video. It's a demonstration video, and it's kind of limited in terms of scope. I think it's got one leader and a swarm of four that follow it, but we'll have that video in the show notes. It's always fun to look at drone swarms and consider how the problem of controlling and managing the swarm is being handled. And this is another one of those examples.
And let's follow the theme. This is also using an ultra-wideband vehicle-to-vehicle radio link to make it resistant to detection and jamming. So here we go. We have the anti-jamming jammer for the drones that are anti-hackable, which are being worked on to be hacked. So it never fails that for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. And evidently in technology, that law of Newton's is definitely par for the course. Well, we got one last story. This was kind of from our new air team up in New York, who we're friends with. I thought this was kind of interesting. We've had Amazon. This one I don't think I was ever expecting, and that's Walmart commissioning Griffiths and New Air for drone delivery research.
Yeah, according to this information, this article here, Walmart actually has been working with another of the UAS test sites, this one in the western U.S., looking at package delivery by drone. Now, I tried to search around and find some references, some documentation of that, and so far haven't been successful. So I don't know which test site they've been working with. Maybe Walmart is explicitly trying to stay below the radar.
It's classified. They could tell you, but they'd have to kill you.
But anyway, we see now that Walmart is engaging this this test site in upstate New York to do some additional work in terms of package delivery. So, you know, we think of, like you said, David, Amazon.com or Amazon Prime Air being a major player in the package delivery arena. But there are others. Walmart is certainly a big player, and maybe they've got some, you know, designs on package delivery that we just haven't really seen in the past. This will be another great one to follow, a little competition maybe for Amazon Prime Air.
Package delivery. We always talk about package delivery.
Yep.
And I still live within less than a mile from an airport, so it ain't happening in my universe.
You're out of luck.
So we heard about a Slack team on our Slack team. I kind of like that.
Sort of meta.
Yeah, very meta. Let's a very expensive meta. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you discovered?
So we found that there is a, and I think this is new. If it's not brand new, it's pretty new. A members-only Slack team. Let's just back up. For those who aren't aware of Slack, what is it? It's a service that lets you create teams where members of the teams can communicate with each other, post things. It's kind of it can be a closed community. Ours, for example, is a kind of a closed community. You have to be invited into this team. There's this new team that's more than just an invite. It's got a fee, a $49 one-time fee. And they say it's for commercial drone operators, manufacturers, buyers, suppliers, and experts from around the world. As I said, there's a one-time fee of $49. My guess is that's just to keep it a little bit more exclusive so that not just everybody tries to get into this. You can apply for this at dronesglobalslack.com, all one word, obviously. I'm not sure of what all the restrictions or requirements are. I do see there that you must, as they say, keep everything in the Slack group confidential, which is kind of an interesting restriction. And maybe they've got other terms and conditions, don't know, didn't go all the way through the request for registration process. But if that's of interest to you, you can check that out. I know at least one member of our Slack team is taking a look at it. He bought the membership, and we'll get some feedback from him. But I think what they're trying to do, David, is make kind of an exclusive group, commercial-oriented folks, not hobbyists or recreational users.
You mean they're making the Trump golf course version of drone Slacks?
Yeah, sure. Something else we found recently is that if you're a member of AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, you get a 20% discount off of the Drone World Expo conference, or you can get a free expo pass. Of course, that conference is this October 3rd and 4th at the San Jose Convention Center, and there's a code that you can use for that. I'm not going to put it out here for everyone. But if you're a member of AOPA, or if you want to become a member of AOPA, which is probably a pretty good idea, that discount is available.
And one last quick mention, CASA, which is Australia's version of our FAA, has a new app that you can download for iOS, Android, and web, and that's Can I Fly There? which is a drone safety app, which is a lot like Know Before You Fly here in the United States, and reflects the standard operating conditions for those flying their drone commercially under the excluded category of commercial operations, and is a valuable educational and situational awareness tool for both commercial and recreational drone flyers. So it's like Know Before You Fly for Australians. So good for the Aussies. I hope it doesn't scream at you like Know Before You Fly screams at me when I open it up, and it basically screams at me and says, "You got to be kidding. What are you, nuts?" So let's move on. We're going to defer our video of the week, but check out our Swarm technology. And let's talk about some feedback. The first one's from our friend Utah Patrick. And this was a kind of a comic, and we'll put it in the show notes. What did you think of it, Max?
You know, there have been a lot of really funny drone-related comics lately, and I think it's they're always fun to see. And, you know, every one of them seems to have a real element of truth built into them.
We'll put a link to the show notes. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but it's definitely worth, and you'll get a laugh out of it. The next one is from Nitin, and this was sent to you, Max, so I'll let you take it away.
So Nitin is the founder and CEO of FlightBase Incorporated. That's FlightBase.com. They're a Silicon Valley startup, and they look to develop tools for, they say, intelligent and connected commercial drones. And they're releasing, or they have released, I guess, the what they call the first Internet of Drones platform, something that helps developers connect their business applications with drones over 4G LTE, provides real-time access to drone telemetry and control. So interesting technology. There's a video here that also gives you an idea of some of the key features and the potential of this platform. And we'll put that in the show notes.
So I guess with that, Max, we had a successful evening after we had our little ghost got rid of in our system. So why don't we tell everybody where they can find us?
As always, you can find our webpage at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to go right to the show notes, that's at theuavdigest.com/202. And there you'll find links to all the stories we talk about, links to the companies, the videos, everything that you hear about here that you can find online, you'll find in the show notes. So we invite you to take a look at those.
And you can, of course, find our free Slack team at theuavdigest.com/team. Or if you'd like an invite, it's real simple. Send an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can also use that address to send us links of news stories. We love international news stories because they don't necessarily cross our desks. Video of the week, you find something you like, send it to us. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can find us on our Twitter feed at UAV Digest. We'd love for you to leave some feedback on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. That way other people can find us. And of course, you can become a patron of the show and purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store and our patron show. And of course, you can all find all of those links at theuavdigest.com. So with that, Max, I think we'll call this a wrap, and I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.